and welcome to the Talking Food with Bidfood podcast. I'm Daria, Customer Marketing Executive for Education at Bidfood, and your host for today. In this episode, we'll be exploring the impact of the new proposed updates to the school food standards and what they mean for schools, pupils, and parents, as well as looking forward to the future of school menus. I've been really looking forward to this discussion, and we hope you enjoy learning more about school food. Welcome to the podcast, John. Could you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your role and what HCL does?
So I'm John Mont. I'm the CEO of HCL, which is Hertfordshire Catering Limited. So we're an educational catering specialist based in Hertfordshire. I'm also on the national board of the School Food People.
Amazing. So I'd love to touch on especially the work that Bidfood and HCL has done. So of course, recently we had a food safari together, as well as there's lots of development sessions and lots of activity that we have done. Have there been any highlights of our collaboration that you can think of?
I've been at HCL for about 18 months now. And when I first arrived, one of the first jobs I felt I needed to do was make us more innovative in terms of food development. There's lots of restrictions in school catering, school food standards. We're Food for Life compliant as well, SugarWise accreditation as well. That means that we have certain boundaries with regards to development, but it shouldn't stop innovation.
Of course.
And so actually working more with the Bidfood team on what's new in the market, what trends are happening on the high street. You know, we feed children up to adult age, so. Mm-hmm. You know, understanding what's happening in the market and then the supplier base, you know, where are there interesting innovations happening there that can support what we need to do in schools?
Amazing. I love to hear the point, especially about innovation. Here at Bidfood, we love all things innovation. We've got our trends, what we do yearly, as well as there's some specific school support when it comes to innovation. We've got our Compete with the Street guides. We've got our amazing chefs and our nutritionist. And yeah, glad that we're both on the same page about that. Could you tell me how long you've been on the School Food People board and your involvement?
I've known the School Food People and previously LACER for a long number of years. So prior to joining HCL, I was working on the manufacturer side in FMCG, supplying in to hospitality, catering, food service people. So I knew Bidfood really well. I was actually trying to get some of my products into Bidfood prior to joining HCL. Lots of innovations in kind of dairy-free drinks and ingredients and what have you. So I've known LACER and the School Food People for a very long time. It was a privilege to be asked to join the national board. We are in the eastern region, which is a little bit of a poor relation just because of geography. It's quite spread out. There's no real center for it. So, you know, I want to try and make that a healthier region, get more people involved in membership in that region, and hopefully influence at national level what the School Food People does. As an industry, you know, we're under significant pressure, not just HCL, but virtually every caterer that supplies school feeding. And I think it's really important that we have a joined up voice. So I'm really delighted to be playing a part in that. It's only been a couple of months, though, so there's still a lot of work to do.
Of course, but it all sounds like an absolutely incredible plan and something that is very needed in our industry. And thank you for that. You have actually touched upon my next question. So I'd love to delve into your career. When did it start? And specifically, you know, where did your love for food begin?
I was meant to be a maths teacher.
Oh.
So that's what I originally went to university for, but I fell into DJing and promoting nightclubs, which was a little bit at odds.
From maths to DJing.
Yes, at odds with going to lectures and things like that. But I just fell into a job that happened to be in the food industry. So my first job was a sales and marketing assistant at Peter's Food Service in South Wales, known locally as Peter's Pies. You know, a great business, and it was a new role there, and I absolutely loved it, not only being close to pies, which I still love to this day, but also, you know, getting into an industry which actually I found I really loved. I really, really love this industry, and I've been in it ever since. My introduction to food was via Delia Smith. So I would come home from school, my nan would pick me up, and while I was having dinner with her, we would watch Delia on the telly, and I absolutely loved that.
Lovely memory.
Yeah, it's really good. I run a blog now called Dad That Cooks, which kind of takes inspiration from Delia, because she would show you how to boil an egg and how to roast a chicken. And that's what my blog does. I think it's really important that everyone have a basic level of food skills so that they can cook for themselves and their family. And so that's how I got into food originally.
Yeah, no, that's such a great story. And it's so interesting to hear about your career, how it evolved, especially as a young professional. It's really great to hear stories like that. You touched upon the blog, and I definitely agree that I think when it comes to food and when it comes to the food industry, we overestimate how many people have these basic skills. But honestly, like when it comes to these skills, it is something we have to learn and something we have to develop. So it's great to hear about, yeah, the role we play in that through your blog. So the next question is a burning one, especially within the school food industry and everything that is going on currently. There's a lot of discussion about that. So for the benefit of our listeners, I wanted to give a summary of the proposed updates to the school food standards, which will shape today's discussion and podcast. So the proposed updates to the school food standards aim to provide the nutritional quality of school meals, so improving them and in the long run making them healthier. And some of the points within these proposals include reducing foods high in fat, salt and sugar, and encouraging more vegetables and whole grains. And overall, the main goal is to tackle childhood obesity, improve transparency, and just support more balanced menus within schools. So John, could you please tell me, what was your initial reaction to these proposals?
I was really pleased that we have this opportunity as a community to inform the government as to the reality of what it's like on the ground. We know that the government has had the ear of nutritionists for quite a while, and we could see that there were potential developments within the school food standards that were at odds with the funding that we have and the kind of menu appeal that we need to ensure that lots of children eat the food. What actually made me laugh when it started was a big focus on all the pizza and the sausage rolls and all the deep frying that we do. It actually ignored the fact that in the vast majority of schools and for many caterers, we already have a really strong health balance in our menus. The current full school food standards are really powerful in terms of providing a nutritional balance and something that provides choice for children, whatever their needs are. We don't deep fry everything every day. We don't have sausage rolls on our menu in primary school. We already have fresh fruit available every day, salad bars. We've already introduced over the past few years, with Bidfood's help, more whole grains, more pulses. And, you know, we've got a really good balanced menu that provides good nutritional standards that are appealing to children. We want to make sure that there is a balance between good nutrition and the realities of the funding that we have. So we're really pleased that now the whole community, caterers, schools, parents, can speak to the government, tell them what they think, and hopefully drive a good outcome.
Of course, it's all about the balance. We all want healthier meals for children, but how does that actually work with the reality is the very big question. And when it comes to understanding the proposals and the new updates to school food standards, please do reach out to your account manager, who does have resources to help you understand these, as we all want to understand them, and they can be quite complicated, especially when it comes to the distinction between primary schools and secondary schools. And what would you consider the most important updates to the school food standards that schools and caterers especially need to understand right now?
I think there are a couple of really big positives to really define the expectations with regards to fresh fruit and vegetables, to ensure that there are increased use of things like pulses and whole grains, especially the change that they wish to make, where a school governor has to have oversight to ensure that the school menus are compliant. We think that's really important. Mm-hmm. In our experience, not many governors know that it's actually the governor's responsibility to ensure that the menus are school food compliant. So we think that's a really positive change. We're not so keen on some of the specific changes that they're making with regards to reduction in the amount of cheese that we can use, children love cheese. And the restriction on desserts, we think, is a real problem because we want as many children as possible to eat the food. It's really important for the success and the sustainability of the whole category that we have good uptake levels in our schools. Children love dessert. They love a pudding. Many of them eat jelly and fruit. That's on our menu every day. Lots of them like the occasional cookie and the occasional cake. It's all about balance. But that dessert, I think, is the thing that brings a lot of children in to having the main course. We think the proposals go a little bit too far down the health route. And where it's been tested in schools, there's actually been a 15% reduction in uptake. Now, if that's reflected across the whole industry, that would be catastrophic for the sector.
And thank you for the point about desserts. I feel like desserts are very easily demonized. However, when you think about the grand scheme of things, especially when it comes to meal uptake, and as the government is currently expanding the amount of children that can be eligible for free school meals, it's very important to remember that when a child comes into school and they do have a meal in there, it might be the only full meal they have during the day. So uptake is a very important aspect, the most important one I would consider, and something that we have to be very, very considerate of when we make any proposals or any changes. So now looking into the future of school meals, what do you see that looking like over the next 5 years or so?
There are two areas, I think, where we're going to see some change. We know that a lot of caterers are under pressure. There are caterers of a certain size that can absorb the low margins that are in educational feeding from business they have elsewhere. But there are a lot of primarily regional caterers that only supply educational feeding or healthcare feeding where margins are really small. So we can see acquisitions, closures, mergers happening. Local authority feeding is already under significant pressure, and a number of local authority caterers have closed or on the route to closure. We can see more consolidation in the market. And we can see caterers potentially failing. So the ability for others to step in and continue feeding those children, which is the ultimate priority, is really, really important. We hope from a food perspective that actually we can see some greater innovation in the future. The government should recognise that actually an investment into school feeding provides significant benefits in the long term. If they fund that correctly, we can give really good, nutritious foods for children, things they recognise because they become very aware of what they eat at home, what they eat when they go out with their family from quite an early age. And bringing some of that innovation into the market at primary level would be a really great improvement, both for nutritional standards and the uptake that we have for those children. If we have a bit more funding that's more realistic, against the true cost of providing that service, I think we could have significant benefits for generations to come.
Especially with that point when it comes to innovation. Here at Bidfood, we do really want to help our customers be ahead of the game. So this is why we have created a bunch of guides. They're called the Compete with the Street Guides, and they are really all about mirroring, as you mentioned, all these things that children see on TikTok, on the high street, and things they talk amongst each other. So as a wholesaler, we do try and support, as you said, caterers and suppliers with things like that. Now, moving on to, I want to talk about allergens and how schools can support that, especially considering the fact that Benedict's Law will be coming into force this September. And for some background, Benedict's Law was introduced following the tragic death of two-year-old Benedict Blythe from an allergic reaction. And the aim of this law is to strengthen allergy awareness, communication, and safety practices in all schools from September onwards. So what impact, John, do you think this new allergy safety requirements will have on school food service and menu planning?
We're a big supporter of this new regulation change. Benedict's Law, we think, is really, really important for the sector. we have to recognise that actually the vast majority of caterers in the educational catering sector already have really stringent allergy management controls in their kitchens. HCL certainly does. We have a specific allergy management system that we put into all schools from day one. And any parent with a special diet need or a religious need can apply for a bespoke menu through that system. It's very well controlled, it's very well monitored. Our nutritionist team make sure that that's the case. Across the industry, many caterers do a similar kind of thing. So from a caterer perspective, there's already very strong controls in place in the majority of schools. We've always tried to promote to the schools that we serve that there is an obligation that the school has in terms of understanding the allergen needs of the children in their school, and also what happens if something goes wrong. It's not always down to the caterer. There could be packed lunches that come in that maybe have something in that triggers an allergic reaction. There could be other controls that are missed by the school when meals are being served that create an issue. We find it surprising that there are all these safeguarding controls in school, and yet allergy management isn't part of those safeguarding controls. Mm-hmm. So we've been promoting to schools the need to include allergy management in their safeguarding protocols, and we're really pleased that this is coming along to ensure that that's in place in every school.
Of course, as you mentioned, I think we can both agree that it's all about collaboration. You know, what can we do as caterers? What can we do as schools? And I think, as you said, even parents with packed lunches. And I also think education is a big part of it. And, you know, knowing the key allergens, that's something we can all do, whether we work within the school industry or not. And now just circling back to the new proposed standards, what do you think are the biggest operational challenges that caterers and wholesalers can face in actually meeting them?
There are two factors to that. One is the funding. So, you know, we currently have universal infant free school meals funded at £2.61. The true cost of providing that meal is closer to £3.50. Mm-hmm. And we hope the government sees the benefits of increasing funding, both on the sustainability of the sector and the future health of our children. From a supplier perspective, it's important that suppliers understand the financial pressures that we're under. So when we specify a meal price, we're not joking that it's that low. That's the field of play that we're in. Mm-hmm. So how can we innovate around that? We know that suppliers like to have volume. And so what ingredients do multiple things in our kitchens? You know, what solutions can they provide where we may have a small village school that maybe doesn't need a whole case of something? Can they do a different pack format for different school types and different school sizes and things like that? So innovating and understanding where we are in terms of funding is really important. Obviously, we're really keen to do good, balanced nutritional meals for our schools, and having innovations around that is really important. Primary feeding is a really interesting beast in that children want to eat something they recognise. Mm-hmm. So sausage and mash will always do well. Our Wednesday roast day is always very, very popular. So in a roast, you need some kind of meat or protein. You need the potatoes, the vegetables, the gravy, maybe a stuffing ball if you're you know, really special. You know, those are core ingredients. So how can suppliers help us innovate in that space? How can they provide us with protein centres that have interesting additional ingredients in them? I worked a lot in my career looking at added benefit ingredients, sprouting grains, whole grains in salads and things like that. How can we bring that innovation to school feeding, where we're still giving the suppliers a good volume, but they're looking at specific meal ingredients, specific protein centres, innovation around that that can really kill several birds with one stone in terms of us being able to develop those menu items, meet the school food standards, hit a particular target pricing, but do provide something special for the children. We're really keen to see innovations like that.
Mm-hmm. There's two really great points that you mentioned that I wanted to build on. I think the first one is, of course, children love eating what they're familiar with. But I also did read a statistic recently that actually school meals are a great opportunity for children to try new things. I think a lot of parents have heard, you know, there's no way my child ate this at school or ate this at school. But I think a lot of people really underestimate, you know, the power of a communal setting and all the children trying lots of different flavors. So I think, yeah, that's definitely something that can be innovated. You know, how can we bring something so familiar, make it a bit different? And the second point is definitely about kind of switching ingredients or making them, for example, what we do here at Bidfood and something that our chefs are working really hard on is to kind of, for example, introduce a recipe that is 50-50. Mm. I don't know if that's something that HCL does with schools, but for example, a recipe that's 50% meat and 50% lentils or 50% pulses. I think especially when it comes to beans, Bidfood has very proudly pledged into the Food Foundation's Bang In Some Beans campaign. So we're very keen to kind of push beans, especially not only from a health perspective, but also, as you mentioned, from the funding perspectives, beans are cheaper. So is there any way to kind of balance the familiar with the unfamiliar?
Bidfood has helped us a lot in that, actually, and we are working with them on the Bang In The Beans campaign. We think it's a really great idea. We've already introduced 50-50 elements to our menus in certain meals, and we're continuing to explore with Bidfood some of the innovations that are coming through your supply base. We think it's a really great innovation that we're already seeing some really good impacts with at menu level.
That's really great to hear. How would you say that pupil expectations are changing within schools? I don't know if you've seen any difference between primary or secondary schools, but yeah, just love to hear your opinion about, you know, how are these expectations changing and how can we use or understand these expectations to actually create healthier menus that children actually want to eat?
In primary schools, I think there is a communication issue that we have where the parents don't have visibility of what their children eat. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier about, you know, children eating things in school that they might not eat at home. I've seen some of our cook managers talking to children that have never seen broccoli before. You know, they may be in reception class or things like that. And they get them to try them and they really like it. And then they come back the next day and they want more broccoli.
Yeah,
and
it's great to hear.
Fantastic. So providing visibility in primary schools for parents to see actually what does their child eat in school. Our parent ordering system provides really clear visibility over what they're ordering, what's on the plate, really good photography. And we think it's really important that parents do understand at primary level what their children eat, because I think they'll be really surprised mm-hmm. compared to what the parents might have eaten at school, how things have improved and changed over the years. In secondary schools, the pressure is really around time. Mm-hmm. We have a number of schools where we're feeding over 1,000 children and we might only have 45 minutes to do that. And so grab and go is really important. It's how the child wants to eat. They want to get out onto the field with their mates. They want to get back to the library if they've got exams coming up. They just want something that they enjoy, that they don't have to sit down and eat and go. We think that's a thing that's at odds with the school food standards review. They want to reduce the amount of grab and go, which is completely at odds with a number of schools that are reducing the amount of lunchtime there is. Now, we can do still great innovation at grab and go. We've got nourish bowls that are in our secondary schools that a lot of people like. We do some really great healthier paninis and we have a salad bar in all our schools. Children really love that. They can get through quickly. They can go and see their friends. To say you can't do grab and go, I think, is a mistake. And so actually just recognising the way that those students want to eat, where they don't necessarily want to sit down with a plate and a knife and fork, how do we do the best meals for them?
I agree. I feel like grab and go, even from my days as a student, you know, I was very lucky. I had a 50-minute break, but there are some schools where children get 30 and being able to just quickly get lunch and then be with your friends or study in the meantime is such an important aspect. And I think something that should really, you know, continue to be integrated into school menus and not taken away. Something we've to touch upon, but I would just love to focus a specific question about is what specific trends or innovations do you think will shape the next generation of school meals?
We're beginning to see the start of that now. So you talked about the Bang in the Beans campaign. We think that innovation in protein is going to be very interesting. There's been a lot of talk around the rise of vegan food and what have you. Back in my manufacturing days, we lived through that and saw it begin to crash and burn as time progressed. Actually, it's about innovation in protein. So what are the child's needs? You know, if you're a primary child, you know, you need a really good burst of protein amongst other ingredient types. You need to have something that you recognize, you need to have something that you're happy to eat all of. And so that kind of innovation where you are mixing proteins, protein elements, so you're not just using meat, you're using other things as well within that, I think that's a really good route that we will continue doing. At secondary level, it's about the experience that people want to have where they may already have a preference about when they go out with their mates, where do they go? Is it a KFC? Is it a Wagamama's? How do you provide really relevant food for those people that is targeting what they need? You will have people that want to study hard. They want to have good brain food. That is a different nutritional balance to someone who's maybe going out and playing football or rugby for their school. They will want something else. So when we get into secondary schools, we need to give them something that's relevant and they understand and they will buy into, but is tailored to the specific needs that they have as they're getting towards adulthood.
Of course, and that's a really good point. When it comes, I think, especially to secondary schools, it's very important to remember that caterers aren't competing against packed lunches necessarily, but they're competing against the high street. You know, it's so easy for a teenager to, as you said, go to KFC, go to Wagamama's, rather than, actually go to their school canteen. So what role do you believe suppliers and wholesalers should play in helping school adapt to all these changes?
I know really well the complexities of the wholesale market. Mm-hmm. You know, just the logistics and the wheels of it all, you know, don't make innovation easy. I've supplied into that sector. I understand that innovation can be problematic, and sometimes it's the poor relation with regards to innovation. Grocery retail gets everything first, or coffee shops get everything first. Wholesale gets, you know, what are we selling the most of? Let's stick it on a van. Like I say, wholesalers can work with people like us on identifying half a dozen key ingredients that are really vital to the success of our sector. I keep talking about roast dinners, but that protein centre, where are the innovations on that? We do a lot of pasta in our primary schools, particularly. You know, where's the pasta innovations? What interesting things can we do with pasta that maybe bring veg into them? How do we get whole grains into pasta that don't make it look really brown and terrible? You know, that kind of thing. I would love to see the wholesale market just identify two or three key areas where they can support us. Doesn't need to be a big portfolio, but if we find something that works really well, it could unlock great volumes in a specific ingredient that the whole sector would buy into.
Great, and I think that's such a great point about innovation, that you don't have to come up with a completely new concept. You know, as you said, with a pasta, how can we change the pasta? How can we take the protein? And it's not always just about swapping or removing things. What can we add? You know, it's all these simple little things that can make a really, really big difference when it comes to dishes. And then I've got my last serious question. So looking into the future of school meals, if we get school meals right in the next decade, what impact could that have on children, schools, and society as a whole?
We are passionate about as many children as possible having a school lunch. We have broad mix of schools in our portfolio, nearly 500 now. We have schools where uptake is quite low because it's in a deprived area and parents can't afford meals for their children, and so they bring in packed lunches. We see what's in those packed lunches and we see that they are not healthy for the majority of them. We have schools where uptake is over 95%. The mayoral funding in London makes a huge difference at primary level with regards to the success of the meal service there. And we have schools where lunch is effectively another lesson. The whole school comes together, And we feed the vast majority of children in that school. And those schools have a really vibrant culture. The children have the energy to learn through the whole day. They can still do their after school clubs and still have, you know, the ability to keep going. And attainment levels in those schools are generally higher than schools where school meal uptake is a lot lower. If the government recognised that an investment at this level, just an extra 50p, an extra pound on a meal price each day for those children, you could potentially lower future NHS costs if you're creating and growing the next generation with really good education around the benefits of good nutrition, building a passion for food where they've tried lots of different new foods or ingredients that maybe they're not having at home. That actually makes healthier adults. And I think that if the government recognised that we could fund school meals properly now, if we stipulate that by default children should have a school meal, unless there are good reasons why not, and we do that for a long period of time, you could see a dramatic change in the nation's health for generations to come.
Yeah, that's incredible, John. And I think you phrased it so impactfully. You know, this is really where everything starts. You know, these children are our future. So how can we provide them with a great, strong foundation that will, of course, impact society for many generations to come? And finally, for some fun, I've got some quick fire questions. All right. So no thinking, quick fire, first thing that you can think of. What was your favorite food at school?
The skin off the top of custard. So I'm
just the skin.
I'm quite old. So you know, I was in primary school in the late 70s, and every day we either had a suet or a sponge pudding for dessert and a massive silver jug of custard on the table. Yep. And I would ask Mrs. Smith, who was the head dinner lady, if I could have the skin off the top. And I always got the skin off the top, about that thick. It was fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And she'd get a big hug off me afterwards. So still remember that really well.
No, that's super sweet. And I think, yeah, school meals have such a big potential to create such great memories and such great stories. What is your favourite food currently?
I like a really good roast lamb Sunday lunch, using saltmarsh lamb from Wales. It's just the best lamb of anything. Now, it's only in season at certain times of the year. So when it's not in season, I'll have a nice curry.
Any specific curry that you like, or...?
Now, this is going to make me sound like an absolute glutton, but my go-to curry is a lamb jalfrezi on top of a chicken biryani.
Oh, wow.
Honestly, don't knock it until you've tried it. It's absolutely sensational.
And what would you say currently is the most popular theme day at HCL?
Now, this is interesting because we're actually looking at the future of theme days at HCL because... we want as many children as possible to have regular, interesting days during their feeding. But actually, it provides some complexities at operational level and within the school office because we're introducing new meals and what have you. The one that I really like doing, we don't always change the menu for it, but the one I really like doing is World Book Day because everybody dresses up. And, you know, there was one of our head teachers for the last World Book Day dressed up as one of the crayons from The Crayons That Quit. And I thought that was excellent. Imagine turning up at school and your head teacher's dressed up like yellow crayon. I thought that was great. So we all our schools participate in that. Some schools have a different menu, but we always, you know, participate in that. Some of our kitchen teams dress up. It's a really great day.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I do remember World Book Day as when I was younger. And I think while these days can provide some challenges, I think, well, hopefully they provide some really great memories and moments and something that, yeah, can be continued. And my last question. Since we're talking about the future of school food, which school food trend do you think pupils will love next year?
Well, that's quite interesting. We know that children are continuing to travel more. And I think having more European food on their plate, we'll probably we'll start seeing more of that next year. Now, there's always a lot of pasta and pizza, lots of Italian. But Greek and Turkish, Middle Eastern, we can see more of that coming in. People knowing what a gyros is and things like that. The fact that it's loaded with chips is neither here nor there. But, you know, that kind of more Eastern Mediterranean culture, I can see more of that beginning to come into school menus as time progresses.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see that myself. I think even in general, like, as we become more interconnected, there's just so many different cuisines that more and more of us are trying. So, yeah, that's really interesting. Do you like a gyros?
I do. I do. Now you're saying it properly. So that just... Excellent work. No, I do. I do. I love Mediterranean food across the whole region. It's so vibrant and different and naturally very, very healthy. There's a lot of fresh salad vegetables used, you know, freshly cooked pasta, properly fermented pizza bases. It's absolutely fantastic food. I travel to Turkey a lot for my summer holidays, and some of their stews and casseroles are just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Really, really lovely.
Yeah, some really great food. Well, John, I cannot thank you enough for joining me here today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've really loved chatting to you, not only about, you know, the future of school meals, but what's going on currently and how that's impacting the industry as a whole.
Thank you for inviting me along. It's been great.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Talking Food with Bidfood. We hope you find the conversation insightful and that it's given you some understanding and insight into school food. If you'd like to learn more about the proposed school food standard updates or the support and solutions available from Bidfood, please speak to your account manager. Also, don't forget to subscribe. That way, you'll be the first to hear of our future episodes. Until next time, goodbye.